I'm Mark Bayshore. Many thanks for joining us. When you think of illegal trade, you probably first think of drugs or weapons, but there's another type that's on the rise in many parts of the world, wildlife trading. It's the fifth most profitable illicit trade in the world, and it's being researched extensively by our next guest, a professor at MSU. Meredith Gore has a joint appointment in the Department of Fisheries and Wildlife and the School of Criminal Justice at MSU, and she co-founded the Conservation Criminology Program there. Her research focuses not only on illegal wildlife trade, but also the exploitation of natural resources, and she works to understand people's perceptions of these problems and find solutions within communities. She joins us now to tell us more. Meredith, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
You have said that you're interested in studying how natural resource declines serve as both a cause and a consequence of crime. Explain each for us, if you would. How do they serve as a cause of crime?
Sure. Well, when you have declining natural resources, a lot of the times you have individuals whose livelihoods depend on natural resources. So you think about fishermen who fish for a livelihood. That's the way that they draw their income and support their family. When fish stocks crash, there's no livelihood opportunity. So we know in some parts of the world, when fish stocks crash, some of the fishermen have turned to crime. Mm. So a lot of the Somali pirates that individuals maybe read about in the news were formerly fishermen. Mm. Fish stocks crashed, and these individuals are turning to other livelihood options, criminal options, to support their families. So that's one example of how natural resource declines can cause crime. And then natural resource declines can also be a consequence of crime, right? So you think about a lot of the illegal trafficking that's going on in elephant ivory and rhino horn right now, and these crimes are decimating these wild populations of animals in their native habitat.
How serious a problem is the illegal ivory trade here in 2015?
I think it's a serious problem. I think that it's been going on for some time, and over the decades, over time, there have been different policy and programmatic changes that have been successful. But in the past three to five years, the problem is just skyrocketing. So it's a big problem today. Mm.
What are some instances of illegal wildlife trade in the world right now that might be lesser known? I think a lot of people know about the ivory trade. They might know about the rhino horns. What are some others?
Sure. Well, we have an issue that cuts close to home here in Michigan. Reptiles. The trade in turtles and tortoises is a big deal. You have turtles that are traded for pets. So, we had an issue here in Michigan last year where someone was caught in the Detroit airport with something like 1,000 one-month-old turtles and tortoises in boots and cereal boxes. And these were animals that maybe fetch $800 to $1,000. So 1,000 animals, that's a sizable.
These were from Michigan. These were not from this state?
They were, some of them were species that are found in Michigan and North America, and then others were just bred here. But they were going to be exported. I think the individual was caught getting on a flight to Beijing. So this is an issue that definitely, affects us here at home. We do have species in Michigan that are trafficked. So reptiles and birds are sometimes trafficked for pets. I just was in Indonesia this summer in May, and I saw 3 yellow-crested cockatoos that were confiscated in the suitcase of a government official. They were stuck in a plastic water bottle, essentially, to be trafficked for someone's, I don't know,
in what,
pleasure.
And what distinguishes what might be defended as a domestication of a wild animal? I mean, where do you draw the line exactly between what is legitimate and what isn't legitimate?
Yeah, and I think that's a really important question. I'm an academic. I mean, I'm really interested in conducting research on these types of problems. And it's a slippery slope between what's legal and what's illegal. A lot of the times, illegal goods are trafficked right alongside
legal goods.
Exactly. So we have laws on the books, and we have individuals that do follow these laws. But a lot of the times, they're exploited. There's corruption. and there's forgery, and so it's not as cut and dry as we'd like to think.
The line is blurred.
Yes,
it's increasingly blurred.
Absolutely.
In recent years.
Absolutely.
Tell us about some of your other travels here. You went to Indonesia. Where else in the world have you learned most about this issue?
So I've had the good fortune to spend some time in Madagascar, which is a place that's very near and dear to my heart. And in Madagascar, there are a whole host of conservation issues and wildlife trafficking issues. So there's a growing illegal timber trade there. There's always been some illegal timber trade, but they have beautiful species of rosewood and ebony. And so these are precious hardwoods that are used for furniture, musical instruments, and they're kind of stockpiled on the beach. The logs are stockpiled on the beach, and they're exported to Asia and other locations around the world for furniture and musical instruments. And these logs generate a substantial income for crime syndicates that are engaging in the activity, and local people don't get much money at all. Yeah, so Madagascar, and in Madagascar, there's lemurs, there's chameleons, there's birds, frogs. A lot of species there are trafficked because a lot of the times they're found no place else on Earth. Mm. So it's a novelty.
We're speaking about illegal wildlife trading with Meredith Gore, associate professor in the Department of Fisheries and Wildlife and the School of Criminal Justice here at Michigan State University. Part of what you study is kind of this community view, this community dynamic. What have you learned about how people view and relate to these issues in their communities?
So a lot of my work on community-based natural resource management has been in Madagascar. So, it's been really insightful to learn more about how local communities can be a source of intelligence, when, where, how illegal extraction is going on. These individuals within communities are also essential to the solution. So we might have a government level policy that says, that certain individuals are going to be monitoring or keeping their eyes out for criminal activity. And unless you have community buy-in, the programs aren't going to work. So trying to understand, local sources of intelligence, and then also what would inspire local people to contribute to the solution has been something that I've been spending quite a bit of time studying in the past couple of years.
What policy change would you most like to see put into play?
Gosh, here in Michigan or globally? I mean,
it to Michigan. Our program is supposed to be about Michigan. Which one?
Sure. Well, just earlier this month in November, the Global Anti-Trafficking Act, I think that's what it's called, was just passed the House of Representatives and is now under consideration for the Senate. I think this is a good act, and I think would really benefit wildlife and reduce the negative impacts of wildlife trafficking. So that would be great if that passes and becomes law in the U.S. That would have a really good impact, I think.
What you co-founded the Conservation Criminology Program here at MSU, and it's the only school in the world, I'm told, offering a graduate certificate in Conservation Criminology. Tell us about what the program entails.
Sure. So this is a really exciting teaching dimension of my work. Well, an aspect of my work that marries research and teaching. The certificate program is designed for graduate students. It's all online, and the certificate integrates natural resource policy and management. So we teach students principles of natural resource management, criminology, and also risk and decision science. And the idea is to get a sort of holistic picture and build capacity to try to address these conservation crimes. They're increasingly complex, and they're complex to sort of think about and also to resolve. So we have faculty members that study illegal trade in electronic waste, some agricultural issues. There are a lot of environmental justice issues. So these conservation criminology is much broader than just wildlife.
Is illegal trafficking in wildlife going to get worse before it gets better, or is it not that at that point?
Gosh, I think that's a good question. I don't have a crystal ball, but it's not a good situation right now. I think that the global connectivity, globalization is contributing to wildlife trafficking, and unfortunately, we have crime syndicates and even terrorist organizations that are reported to be involved in this. So wildlife trafficking is now a source of revenue for a lot of bad apples. And so I think natural resource exploitation is going to definitely continue.
We want to thank Meredith Gore. She has a joint appointment in the Department of Fisheries and Wildlife and the School of Criminal Justice here at MSU. She is a co-founder of the Conservation Criminology Program here. We've been talking about the illegal wildlife trade. Meredith Gore, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This segment is supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. More news about the Great Lakes environment can be found at greatlakesecho.org and on Current State every Tuesday as part of our partnership.